home warranty or something, and the guy would come every year and do a maintenance on their AC. And every year the guy would be standing there with his gauges and his 6 foot hoses connected to the system. Like every year for like 5 years. I'm like, dude, you don't, it's running fine. Like I wanted to go to him and say, dude, for the last five, you've probably taken out about just maybe a pound of refrigerant over the last 5 years connecting your gauges up to this system, right? So don't be surprised if they call you back in a couple of years and it's short of gas and you can't find the leak. Right? So, I mean, anyway.
At Koolair Products, we developed AC Smart Seal QuickShot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's three in one, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast. So, some life lessons are not learned in school. Some of the best life lessons are learned outside of school, like going on a job site with your dad. That's what we're going to talk about on this podcast. So, I don't know if you guys have ever wanted to take your son or daughter out onto a job site with you that was safe enough for them to be on and teach them what you do, show them what you do, show them the tools and the equipment and stuff you work on. Expose them to something that is different that they don't see in school. They don't get an opportunity to learn about in school. Well, we're going to talk to a father-son duo. They work for the same company. We have Ken Senior, Ken Perkins Senior, and Ken Perkins Junior, father-son. They work for the company that I spent some time with in Florida, Helios, but they're in the northern states. They're in Wisconsin and Illinois. And we're going to talk to them about how Ken Senior brought Kenny Jr. out on the jobs at 6 or 7 years old and pulled him out of school to do so. Pretty cool stuff, actually. And I mean, we're going to talk about different things within the industry. How Kenny came up quickly from an 18-year-old to a 22-year-old service tech, where he wants to go, how he leaned on his dad a bit to learn the trade, and how his dad brought him to the point where he could move quickly through the trade once he got into it. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and I have a pitch for Master. I have a very cool pitch for them to create some cool content. What I want to do is get behind the counter and help some customers out from behind the counter and see what it's actually like being someone on that side of the business. My whole goal is to explore this trade of HVAC refrigeration from top to bottom as best I can. And I think getting behind the counter and serving people would be something that would be kind of cool. So, Master, if you hear this, I'm coming after you to ask you this question because I would love to do something like that with you guys. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas, and feeling like a true blue-collar worker down at heart means you're wearing blue-collar gear, right? Some good quality, stylish. Blue-collar gear is stylish now. You can get some stylish stuff. So if you're looking to outfit your team with some quality gear, the blue-collar trades, HVAC, refrigeration, plumbing, whatever it may be, check out our landing page. It's cintas.com/HVAC know-it-all.
Welcome to the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. Recorded from a basement somewhere in Toronto, Canada. Your host and HVAC tech, Gary McCready, will take you on a deep dive into the industry, discussing all things HVAC. From storytelling to technical discussion. Enjoy the show.
Gents, this is the first father-son duo on the podcast. How does that make you guys feel? I'll start with you, Ken Jr., because, I mean, it's got to be something pretty special to work in the same industry as your dad and have your dad as a shoulder, or I don't want to say the word crutch, but it kind of is the word. Hey, Dad, like, I'm in a pickle here. Can you help me out? How was that when you were coming through?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, I grew up with it. You know, he would take me on jobs and stuff, random side jobs and all that, and help him out even as a kid. Have to take days off of school, and my mom wouldn't like it, but we'd get to do that together. And I thought it was a lot of fun. I've always been interested in, you know, tools and shop things and fixing things. And it's kind of my passion is to fix things. So being able Nice. To do it every day, especially with, you know, having somebody who can help you and knows a lot about it, not having no support whatsoever is very nice to have.
So my son, so how old were you when you started going out on the jobs with your dad?
Probably like 6 or 7, I would say, was one of the first times.
Young, eh?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
At that point, it was more of, yay, I don't get to go to school and I get to, you know, travel around. We'd drive a couple hours away and just, I'd watch movies on the laptop and we'd have fun and, you know, have dinner.
So you know what, man? Poland, there's actual people that would look down upon that. But I think that is amazing that you, because school teaches you one thing, but getting on the road with your dad is an experience that you can't ever, you can't ever exchange it for anything else, because that's one-on-one with dad, driving around, fixing stuff, talking about guy things. You know what I mean? That is something that's really important for a father-son relationship. And I recently started bringing my son onto job sites. He hasn't been on a ton. Mm-hmm. He's in the 9th grade. He's 14 and he's got some interest, but not a full interest. So I want to expose him to the trade and see where that takes him. But I've said to myself, man, if I got like a little 2-man job or something like that, I wonder if the wife would be mad if I yanked him out of school for the day because I need a set of hands to help me carry something somewhere. You know what I mean? And that's a conversation that I haven't had yet, but it's one that I'm willing to pull the trigger on if it comes down to it, because you know what I mean? I would rather pay him to come work with me than pay anybody else to come work with me, because we get to have that bonding relationship. I get to teach him some stuff and I know it's going to stick with him through his life that, hey, I pulled him out of school that day to come hang with dad and learn some cool things. So, Ken Senior, man, let's get to you. You and I spent some time in Florida, which was amazing. And we had a video that I broke into like 3 different parts. And there was a lot of good feedback of just you and I talking shop in the back of that, whatever we were in, expedition or whatever that thing was that day. So it was a lot of good feedback on it. And I think that the feedback came from your deep down honesty with how you felt, sort of the trade was going, the trade is at, maybe the trade will be heading into the future, and just some of the things that technicians need to work on to improve themselves, because everybody has a spot they can improve upon, right? So I mean, maybe talk about that for a minute. Like what are some things that we can improve upon as a trade, and some of the things that you implement with Ken Jr. here as he's coming up? So you try to those holes in the knowledge gaps, you try to fill them in and help them out.
Yeah. Like what we spoke, you know, in the past about, obviously with this trade, it's just a lack, I guess, of investment in the technicians. You know, over the years working for multiple companies, you know, as you work your way up, you know, it's like anything. You start at the small company, you know, 2-3 man shop, you move up, you know, you get better as a technician, and then you move up to the next company, obviously, because you want to advance your career. So you start working for larger companies and larger companies and so forth. And it's just a lack of, I guess, investment into the technicians from depending on, and I guess it's not that they didn't want to spend the money, but it's more of the old school aspect, you know, just throw them out there and get it done. We'll make some, you know, a couple bucks off of it. But that was the old school systems. I mean, he had what, 1 contactor. He didn't have, you know, he didn't have boards. He had nothing like you do now, the technology. And what we're not doing is we're not investing into the technician's training. You know, we're just throwing them out there because it's a fast paced industry. So you have to look at it at both sides. It's hard to invest in the tech as well because you can't just, you know, dump thousands of dollars into training every single technician, and then it doesn't pan out. That tech, you're just throwing your money down the drain. So what I've noticed over the years is we're literally not investing into our technicians whatsoever. And that's what I did for Kenny, obviously, was Junior, is I invested, what, I would say 12, 13 years as far as teaching him everything in the trade and having him pay attention to detail when we're out on the road, I mean, like he said, we took him out at what, 6, 7 years old. I had him on the road with me and we would go from site to site. I would explain everything to him, what it does, what contactors do, what the boards do, how the heat works. So he didn't have hands on. I never let him touch anything until he was 18 years old. Never. He was always, you know, and when I'd get home from work, what would I do? I'd show him what my tools are. I'd put my tool bag down. I'm like, these are snips. These are reds. They cut this way. These are lefts. These are straights. And then I would bring sheet metal out, have him cut sheet metal in the garage, just constantly investing time. And I never knew he would even be in this industry. You know, I was just father, son bonding, teaching him the trade. That way he, if say whatever career path he went down failed, he always had something to go back to as far as, you know, support his family, anything that he needed to do. And I don't know how, but it just clicked with him and yeah. He's just running with it right now. I mean,
yeah. And we talked about that in when we were in Florida together about how he came really, really quickly up in understanding and learning the trade. And maybe Ken Jr., you want to talk about that? Like, how old are you right now currently?
I'm 22.
22. And you started working in the industry at what age?
18.
18.
About a month after I turned 18. So about as soon as they would hire me.
So were you in a truck with another technician at that point, or how did that roll?
So when I first started, I rode with him and it only lasted about a month. I think that was about the time that they gave him a supervisor position or something like that, where he didn't have the time to be with me all the time. And in Wisconsin, we didn't have many guys. So it was kind of just with him for that little bit of time. And then they said, well, we got a bunch of PMs, you know, you can be a PM tech. So I started out on my own doing just filters with like very little hands-on experience. A month is pretty short, but you know, at that point I was like, this is cool. I like doing this stuff. So when I would go home, I'd watch YouTube and all that and figure out how to do it, anything on the rooftops, how the things worked and all that. And pretty short after that, I was like, I don't like changing filters anymore. This is boring. The same thing over and over, you know.
I hate changing filters. Yep. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And I have bad allergies. So usually in the spring, like the April filter changes, when I used to do quite a lot of them, the first one you yank out and it like hits the filter rack the wrong way and the dust kind of explodes and you breathe it in. It just sets my allergies off for the next month and a half. And
if you guys are looking for a scale in 2024 and you're progressive, you're technology based, and you're using the Testo platform, or even if you're not, you can still implement the Testo scale. You can do it by superheat. You can charge by superheat, you can charge by subcooling, target superheat, and by weight. You just enter all of this automatically into the gauges, the 550S or the 557S, whatever you're using, or the app. And when you hit go or you hit start, it charges based on what you've set it up for. Pretty cool stuff. So check out the Testo scale, an intelligent valve that comes with it.
I don't want to barge in, but yeah, I wanted to agree with you. I hate changing
filters. Yeah, he calls me daily when he gets complaining. Dad, please tell somebody I can't do this. This is mind numbing. It's part of the job, kid.
No. When I first started, sure.
Started from the bottom, man. You got to start from the bottom. We all do, right? Because you have to. I think it's really important. Like in retrospect, when I think backwards, it doesn't matter what industry you're in. It doesn't matter if you're like a top level chef. You should start with washing those dirty ass dishes, right? And you should work your way up and know every single job in the restaurant business, because that just gives you more power and more knowledge to run a successful restaurant. And the same with HVAC. I mean, if you want to be the top troubleshooter, the top installer, you want to be a consultant and know more than everyone else, guess what? You need to start with filter changes, belts, cleaning coils. You need to do all of that stuff that you don't want to do in order to be the best you can be later on in your career, right? Mm-hmm. Ken Jr., do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, That's exactly how I feel. I mean, can you imagine coming across a service tech who doesn't know how to do a PM, you know?
Yeah.
It would be mind blowing, but I think that is, it's incredibly important to do the grunt work, the stuff you really don't want to do, because that just makes you want to do the stuff you want to do even more, you know? And it makes you want to be better at it because you want to prove that I can do the, in my opinion, the fun part of it, the service side, do it that much more so that you don't have to do the filter changes because they see that you're a really good service tech, you know?
Yeah.
It makes you want to push harder.
Yeah. And I think once you change, let's say you change filters for a year and you're like, you know what, this is boring. And then they finally send you to a service call. All those, that year of changing filters is going to motivate you to figure out what the hell is wrong on that service call. Because now if you figure it out and fix it, now they're like, okay, now we're going to send him to more service calls and we'll get someone else to do the filters. We'll bring someone else to do the filters because Ken Jr. is like becoming a service technician that can figure out problems. So it motivates you in a way to not go backwards once you're given that opportunity beyond the filter changes. There's something that we talked about, Ken Senior, about energy. Was it energy drinks that you brought up and being on a roof and not being fully hydrated?
Yeah. I still remember that. Yeah.
Is that something we can talk about? Because these energy drinks, man, I don't know. I've drank in energy drinks. I've drank in Red Bulls. I've drank in Monsters, but I don't think that they should be used on a regular basis for breakfast. You know what I mean? Breakfast, like in working in a hot environment on the roof, like you need to hydrate yourself with water, and these energy drinks are no good for you, in my opinion, from a health standpoint. So do you want to talk about maybe what happened, you guys, like collectively?
Yeah. I think it was, what did you say, your first week?
Yeah, it was probably one of the first jobs we ever did because it was pretty close to home.
And we were on a roof. It had to be every bit of 95, 96 degrees out. I would say 70% humidity. And I mean, we were just getting beat on that roof. We had 4 or 5 units to look at on a white roof. I mean, you took a temperature, I think we were close to 120, 125 degrees on the roof.
Wow.
And
middle of June.
Yeah, the middle of June. One of Kenny's first jobs. And, you know, he's 18. He can handle, you know, the world's nothing. He can take on the world at 18. And
yep,
I would invincible. Say after a good 2-3 hours on that roof looking over at him, I mean, he just did, he looked flush, didn't look right. And I'm like, you all right? And he went down. And I'm like, did you eat anything? Did you drink anything? And obviously he was just drinking, you know, I think he had an energy drink as well, some Mountain Dew. And he didn't drink much water at the time, and he didn't understand, you know. This was one of his first weeks actually seeing what we do in the summer on these roofs for this trade. And
doing actual like labor jobs and working outside. I mean, I did food service since I was 16, so you know, I've never done a lot of hard stuff outside like that.
Yeah.
All day.
Yeah, wearing jeans, you know, humping the compressor up on the roof. Walking, you know, a quarter mile to get to that unit on 125, 130 degree white roof, where not you're even blinded after, you know, when the sun's reflecting off of the roof, which I would say he lasted a good hour and a half before it hit him. And I literally had to get him off the roof, hydrate him. And I can't remember if even had to go to the doctor after. Kenny, you could probably touch on that. Or did you just go home, get hydrated? Like, I had to send him home. He couldn't be up there anymore.
No, I was, after we got the water in me, took a break for a couple hours. I think we went home after that one, but I did stay in the van with the AC on for the rest of the time that we were out.
Yeah.
So what changes did you make from that point? Because obviously that would have been scary, right? I mean, I've been dehydrated on a roof too. And I mean, I should probably do a better job at bringing water with me when I'm on these roofs, but I've always been very good at, like, you know what, I need to go take a break and I need to go get a drink of water and I need to just sit down for a minute. I've always been kind of good at that because I know that there's a breaking point, and maybe it takes a while to understand what your breaking point is. And before you get to it, it's time to sit down, take a break, get some water. But what changes did you make in your lifestyle due to that, if any?
Just generally a lot more water, you know, heading out the door in the morning, stop at the gas station and grab a gallon of water. Usually in the summer, at least a gallon in the summer, I'll bring it up. If not on the roof with me, then, you know, I'll start chugging it right before I get up there and take a break and go back down and grab more if I need it. Otherwise, if I'm like, I want to just smash this out, I'll bring it up on the roof with me and just keep going at it, keep it in the shade, keep it cool. And that's definitely the biggest thing, but I think there's also a part of a conditioning type to it as well. Cause there's times where I've forgotten and you're sitting in the sun all day and you start to get a little bit of that feeling and then, you know, you got to take a break, but it didn't come on as quickly as it did that time. Like there's definitely been times I've had that heat stroke or heat exhaustion come on me, especially doing installs and stuff way down south where it's like, I actually just had it happen to me over the summer in Arkansas. It was probably all of 110 degrees ambient out down there, no clouds or nothing. And I was feeling it. I was out by like 2 o'clock. I told the guys, like, I can't continue anymore. And they were all starting to feel the same way sitting in that sun all day.
Yeah. And here's the other thing too, is for me, every morning I wake up, I chug a big glass of water. But when you get to me and your dad's age, if you got a long drive, you got to stop and pee. you know how many times that I've been on the highway in the middle of traffic and it's been like excruciating. Like, do you carry like a Gatorade bottle to take a pee in, Ken? See, when you're on long trips.
Yeah, I remember those days.
Yeah,
I would, but with my van, the windows, like even with my thigh. On those transits.
That's what I don't like about those transits. The windows are so low. I'm like, why did they design the windows like this?
You
kind of got to lean forward a little bit, and then you're going to look like a fool driving.
Yeah. You look like a pervert driving on the highway.
So your rise to from 18 to 22 in the trades. What position are you in now after starting out at Filter Changes? Let's go to where you are 4 years later.
I'm a service tech.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. So what is your ambition moving forward? Like, what is your goals in the next 5 years or so? Is it to one day own your own company? Is it one day to be the service manager, regional service manager? Like, what is your goal right now, if you have any?
My goal is to be a supervisor. That's kind of where I want to be, but I like being in the field. I want to stay in the field. I really don't like the admin side of it. I've done it before, you know, I've gotten hurt, busted my ankle a little bit, and I was doing quotes and stuff for a couple weeks, and I'm like, this ain't for me. So I definitely want to stay in the field, but I want to be a little bit higher than where I am now.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, I mean, you got lots of time for that to happen. I mean, so Ken Senior, I think we talked about this during our meetings and stuff down in Florida, and I think one of the ways we be a perfect position for Ken Junior in a couple of years, since he doesn't like the admin stuff and he likes to stay in the field, and this is a position that I've thought about creating or in my mind have created for myself when I worked. For someone else, is that we need mentorship in the field. We need education. We need training in the field. And we need a buffer zone between the technicians and the apprentices learning and the helpers and the kind of the office staff. And what if we created this position and you're just a full-time trainer that goes out? You're not going on your own calls. None of your own calls. You're just spending time every single day with a person in the company that needs assistance, they need training, they need help, they need to push their education on a little bit further. And that's all that person does. They've got knowledge, they've got skill, they've got tools, they've got a built up wealth of expertise that now they can go drive around and just show up onto job sites. They can make sure the quality control is up to par. They can train. They can be a buffer between the technician when they have a problem or the apprentice in the office. This is a position that I think could be something that a lot of companies look at implementing over the next little while, because I think some of the older generation, they come down too hard on the kids. I mean, there's got to be, if you want to attract people to the trade, we can't be throwing wrenches at people. We can't be swearing at them the way me and you maybe got treated at one point. Because kids today, I mean, people call them soft, but walking away from a situation that they don't like, I don't think that's soft. I think that's manning up and saying, I don't want to be part of this. I'm moving on. So if we can create an atmosphere that helps these people grow and becomes a better person, a better technician, and a better all-around person within the HVAC trade, I think that would help. What do you think about this role where all you do is go around onto other job sites within your company and just help the technicians that need help? What do you think about this role?
Yeah, I think it's 100% beneficial. Pretty much we're going to bring the classroom into the field. You know, more of the hands-on and not like the old school, you know, pretty much when, say you went to a school, the books you're learning from are, I mean, like right now, there's schools still using books that, you know, they're explaining, you're spending weeks, days on end to go over thermocouples. You know what I'm saying? Like, just stuff like that. They're still using old books, which, I mean, it's just not up to date. So
yeah,
we're going to send people to school, classrooms, I would say, to learn about stuff that's not even in the field anymore. You know, so if we pretty much can create a position where hands-on, like say myself or you, Gary, we're in the field daily, not on the phone where, you know, some people like myself, maybe you as well, I'm more hands-on. You show me, I put my hands on it. Most likely I'm not going to forget it. And I know that's how Kenny yep. is. Kenny's the same way. And I would let him, you know, change the thermostats or show him how to change the heat exchanger. But if I told him, he's not going to learn, he's not going to learn the same by putting your hands on it. And if we could, you know, potentially just have someone all day, every day. What's Wisconsin, Kenny? Got five, six guys up there?
Five.
We have five guys where he works. If we had somebody every day, just and not just for that area, but say spend 2 weeks up there.
Yeah, that's right. Just roam around. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And go from job site to job site. You know, show me what you do. And you go from each tech. You know, show me the process, how you do it. And then, you know, just whether it's taking a panel off or, and like, you know, Gary, you take a panel off, you don't put that on top of the unit. The wind's going to grab it.
No.
You know, and that's.
Slice your neck off.
It's common sense to us now, but how did we get taught? Because we saw that panel blow off. Nobody told us that. So then you learn over time, but just minor things like that to teach these technicians and to train them, you know, with your screws. You got a rubber roof. What are you doing with your screws? You know, you're not thinking about it. You take your screws off, you just throw them right on the roof. You're in a hurry, you step on it, now you just punctured the roof. You know, just stuff like that to teach the guys when you're doing commercial work. I mean, it would be amazing to have somebody be able to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, it would be completely. So a lot of people are thinking, well, isn't that the service manager's role? Well, here's the problem with the service manager. The phone is ringing all the time because there's customers that want to talk to the service manager. There's the office staff that wants to talk to them. There's all kinds of things going on. And how do you help someone if you're just standing on your phone the whole time you're on the job site with them? Mm-hmm. So this position needs, it can't be the service manager. It just has to be someone that is dedicated to training the technicians. And they're not worried about billing time to the customer. Oh, we got to hurry up. I mean, this is taking too long. We're going to bill the customer too much time. It has to be like, we're here. We're spending the time, we're investing into you and you and your education because it's only going to better yourself and the company later. So I mean, it's just something that I've always thought would be beneficial to the trade, but there's got to be an investment from the company to put that person into the mix because that's a complete overhead, but it's going to pay off in the long run if the person is doing their job correctly. So
that's my thought as well. A successful business, you can't worry about profit every second. You know what I'm saying? Everything cannot be. I mean, yeah, you need an ROI, but that is that technician. You are selling that tech. You're only as good as your worst. And if your worst is the best, you're going to be successful. And we just have to spend the time training the techs from, you know, I can guarantee you how long it took me 10, 12 years to finally become a good tech. If we spend the time with these techs and train them, they can do it in 5, you know, it'll cut the time in half.
Yeah, I think so. With the right development, yeah, we could cut the time in half 100%. So Ken Jr., what do you think of that role? Is that something that you would like to do, like later on in your career, is just be a mentor and a trainer to other technicians coming up through the field?
I think that'd be a pretty good spot, especially when I get a little bit tired of carrying compressors up by myself or something, you know.
Yeah.
A little bit later, definitely when I want or know more than I do now, being more confident in what I'm doing is the right thing every single time, you know, without having to ask anybody. But
so let me ask you this then, 4 years into the trade with a bunch of years driving around with your dad, what do you feel that you need more training on? What do you feel like right now that there's things that you lack in knowledge that you would like to be brought up to speed more on?
So the Ambro Controls torch set, the Oxy set, something I've been using since about May. It's coming up with a backpack soon to carry it. It's also going to keep all of your accessories inside of it and keep it a little bit safer in your truck from rattling around. It's also got the Precision torch tip, which is a separate purchase, but it helps for like the smaller things that you do if you're doing reach-ins or anything that is small scale where you have to get a torch in and you don't want to burn up the entire thing, and you want to get that torch in a precision type setting. So check out the Ambro Controls Oxy set and the Precision torch tip and look for the backpack coming real soon.
I would have to say probably more of advanced like refrigeration stuff.
Okay.
That we mostly work on a lot of zero zone and Hussmann like reach-in cases.
Okay.
And they're super simple systems. There's pretty much nothing to them besides you got to make sure the basic refrigeration stuff is correct, you know, don't overcharge them and all that, and make sure you swap the dryers and the TXV. Like the TXV is going to be the hardest thing on those guys, except for the new ones. Excuse me. But I haven't seen much of like rack refrigeration or anything like that. And okay. I know that if I were to stumble upon it for whatever reason, if we get a client that would have it, it would be a kind of a system shock at that point.
Yeah. Rack refrigeration is a different animal altogether. I mean, I shouldn't say I've never been involved in any sort of rack refrigeration, because I have to a certain extent, but it's not something that I would see a lot of during my career. I saw a lot of walk-in freezers and a lot of walk-in coolers, but not rack systems, just basically standalone systems that would have backup or standby. But I mean, if you think about it though, it's the rack stuff, it's just a bigger scale. I mean, there's obviously more bells and whistles, right?
Yeah.
on the system. But it's just something like the Hussmanns that you're working on. It's that, but on a larger scale. So the concepts are all the same, right? The refrigeration cycle doesn't change. It's just there might be little bits of intricacies that are a little bit different. And you just got to figure out what differentiates between the two systems as far as components, as far as maybe how it runs and how it differentiates between how it runs and how they cycle and all that kind of stuff. But really the concept comes down to it. It's all the same. It's like when people go from residential to commercial, they get really, not scared, but I guess they're unsure of themselves when they make that step from residential to commercial, but it's just the same in a bigger box. The concepts are the same. There's just little small things that you're going to have to learn and develop a little bit differently on the commercial side than the residential side. So Ken Senior, I mean, does that sound like it's true? I mean, it's the same stuff, just a little bit bigger, and we just got to figure out what the differences are between them and focus on them to kind of escalate our knowledge a little bit.
Yeah, a couple more wires, yeah, and a couple, you know, extra components, one more contactor or a relay. I've seen that in the trade as well. Yeah. Obviously myself, when I started residential, you know, went from a 5-ton condenser to, you know, I think the first commercial rooftop I looked at was 100 ton. I mean, that was definitely a system shocker from a 5 to 100 ton unit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. No kidding.
3/4 line to a, you know, 2.5 inch suction line, you know, big difference. And you're talking 20 contactors in the 100 ton unit, you know, compared to one. So same concept, just at a larger scale.
Mm-hmm. And I think you got to compartmentalize just everything. It's like, okay, so, and it's really good to have a good diagram. And I find some of these larger systems, like the 100 ton trains or McQuays or whatever, the diagrams are half decent in those. So it's really just getting the order of operations down with that machine, and you can figure out what those are from reading the diagram. That's why I think, and I preach reading diagrams is super important. So at a young age, in this trade, you really have to understand those and begin to understand those, because it's like a whole different language.
Yep.
Right. When you look at it, it's like reading hieroglyphics on the side of a pyramid. You're like, what the hell is this? You don't know what the hell it is when you first start. But now, like 30 years into a trade or whoever, however long you're in, you look at a diagram and it's just like plain English. You just see everything the way it should be drawn out. Now, Ken Jr., diagrams, is that something that you're confident in at this point in time? Wiring diagrams?
Yep. Yeah, that was definitely one of the hardest things to pick up when I first started, trying to figure out where things went and what the symbols on it and everything meant. But it's been absolutely the most helpful, because if you're in one of the situations like that with a rack or something, like something you've never seen, the diagram is one of the things that's going to help you figure out where everything needs to go. And that's absolutely, again, the number one thing that other techs will call me on, is they don't know how something is wired or anything. And I tell them, look at the diagram, and they say, I don't know how to read this. I don't know where the things go. And I say, all right, well, you got to send me a picture and we'll walk through it over the phone, you know, and then we got to get to where we need to go off of that, because I can't see the unit in front of you. I can't tell you what color wires you're looking at or where it goes, but I can tell you where it's supposed to be by this diagram.
Yeah. And how did you get good at diagrams? What was your process to get good at them?
Just sitting there and looking at them and looking at the diagram and saying, that's a contactor there. Go up at the unit, look at it, and kind of piece where the wires are off the diagram to the unit itself, and making that mental bridge in your head of the flat 2D piece of paper to in your face and you can touch it on the unit.
Now, have you ever been to a system the diagram is non-existent?
Hundreds of times. It's probably more than half the time.
So how are you dealing with that situation?
At that point, it's more just from memory. You know, when you work on these 5 to 15 ton units every day, you just know where everything is going to go. You know where it needs
correct
to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have that repetitive nature. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and also what you can do is, I've had to do it plenty of times for really old units. You can call the supply house and they'll email you a ladder diagram. You know, there was a York from the '80s that we had to figure out. Everything was rewired and, you know, thousands of guys had their hands in it, and it was in pieces. We had to rewire the whole thing. Both the compressors were shot and we had to figure out why all the fans were dead, you know, and she sent me over a ladder diagram and you could read it and figure out where all the control wires were going. And we found out like half the thing was wired wrong.
Yeah. That's a problem. I mean, in the industry, when you have a lot of hands touching stuff, anytime I open up any system and all the zip ties are cut and the wires are dangling everywhere, I almost want to walk away. I almost want to walk away, right? But sometimes I'm the guy cutting the zip ties because something's just not right. There's no diagram. I cut all the zip ties and now I'm starting to follow wires back to where they go. And I find sometimes that is the only way to figure out the problem. Mm-hmm. But then when I'm done, I put the zip ties back on so I don't leave it spaghetti for the next guy. So Ken Senior, I'll let you guys go in a bit, but I mean, what did you, when you had your son in the van, did you envision that he would be working as a technician at 22, or was it just something like, hey, I'll just throw him in the van and see where this goes? Did you have plans in the back of your head for this? Or is it just something that he developed on his own and that interest was there and he's like, let's do it? Like, how did you see this working out?
Yeah, I mean, I guess any, you know, father would love to see, you know, their son follow in their footsteps. And, you know, I was planting the seed in his head over, you know, just training him and teaching him and, you know, obviously hoping one day that he would, you know, just follow after me and be, I guess I would say better than me. Cause I mean, obviously that's what you always want for your kids. You want them to be better than you.
Yeah, of course.
And Kenny's always been, I mean, since he's been able to walk, talk, he's always been extremely intelligent. And I'm not just saying it cause he's my son, but I mean, kid was 4 years old, you know, putting in VHSs and rewinding and making his own breakfast for him. You couldn't do that for him at 4 years old. You know, he's always been independent. And so when I started to teach him this, he would just pick up on it so quick. And I don't know. So I was just, he wasn't taking interest in the beginning, but he would pay attention, follow me like, you know, a little puppy dog. And I would say around 16, 17, he kind of just like plateaued and he wasn't very interested in the industry whatsoever. And then I'm like, I think it was on right before his 18th birthday. I'm like, hey, if I get you in, you know, what do you think? And I mean, he can even speak for himself is that he's like, ah, okay, I'll try it. And I think everything that I taught him over the years, it just, it all came together. I'm not kidding within, like he said, I would say he was on his own within a month and just retaining everything. It's just, I don't know. But I do want to say a story when he was five. I did come home from work, bought a brand new TV and $900 for this TV back then in, you know, early 2000s. And I put my bag down, started washing my hands, you know, empty the screws out of my pockets, out of my Carhartt. And turn around and he's got my snips and he cut all the wires off the back of the TV from my tool bag. I'll still never forget that day. And he goes, Dad, look, I helped you. I got your tools. And I go, no, you just cut every wire on a brand new TV. What are you doing?
I just thought, was the TV garbage at that point? Or were you able to fix it?
Yeah. Wire nuts. Electrical thing. I had that TV for about 5 more years. But,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, I always wanted him to. Just he wasn't taking interest for a while. And I think once, I guess because he was just more of watching, he's more of a hands-on. And then as soon as he got his own van, I never thought he would get to this point. And I mean, to this day, I mean, I'll go over to his house and what's on his TV. He's not watching shows. He's not watching, you know, movies. He has YouTube on and he's just watching people in the industry and how to do this, how to change out units faster, or just service guys, just or podcasts, everything. I mean, what he's doing right now is what I did at his age. I invested every second of my day into this industry.
That's yeah. So that's an argument I had recently, a debate online, and the heading was invest in yourself. And people were like, you know what? Why are you telling people to invest? Why? So the conversation was, why are you telling people to basically spend their own time to learn? They should be getting paid to learn at work. I said, yeah, that's you're correct there. They should be getting paid to learn at work too. But when you get home at night and you put on Netflix movies or you do whatever, you go out with your buddies, whatever you're doing, if you were to take that energy and channel it into investing back in yourself, like you're doing, Kenny, is watching YouTube videos, podcasts on the trade and taking that time for yourself, you're going to be better than everybody else around you in your work environment because you took that time. And that's what a lot of young kids can't wrap their head around. They want now, they want present. Well, guess what? If you're 18, you're 22, you're 25, you got a long life ahead of you in your career if this is what you're choosing. Why not be the best at it that you can possibly be? Why not be that the best at it you can possibly be and invest your own time where you're not potentially getting paid for it, but one day you're going to get paid for it. Trust me, because you're going to walk into a negotiation or a new job or something with a customer or whatever it is. And you're going to have what is called leverage. You're going to have this big old stick, and you're going to be able to leverage all of that knowledge and all that power that you've generated within yourself and create a path for yourself that is above and beyond what other people are creating for themselves, because you've taken the time to do so. That's my advice to anybody that's listening to this.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty terrible mindset, that I want to be paid to be better. You know, you shouldn't have to have monetary motivation in, you know, in the absolute present to want to be a better person, to want to be better at what you do and be the best you can be. That's, in my opinion, a lazy argument to have, you know?
Well, it is. And Ken, imagine someone said to you, or imagine you said to somebody, yeah, I want to be paid by someone to teach my kid this trade. Like, investing in your own children and taking the time to do that. Imagine you said, yeah, I'm not doing this unless I get paid.
No, that's
right.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
I agree with like what Kenny said. It's a lazy argument. I mean, just another, what was I going to say? I would say the first week that I started this industry, I was a helper, residential. I went home, took my furnace apart. Kenny was probably four. I took my complete furnace apart, laid all the parts on, mixed them up. And that's how I learned how to read a schematic, because I wanted to be the best at what I'm doing. And I don't care if, like you said, if you're sweeping or, you know, if you're digging ditches, be the best ditch digger that you could be. I'm going to invest in myself to be the best that's on that job, whether somebody's paying me for it or not. I don't know. I don't like that argument as well. I shouldn't have to be a better person or be better at what you do, that I should be paid for it. That doesn't, I don't know. I don't agree with that argument as well. It's just, I just thought,
yeah,
the only way to do it is to do it. I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, and those things will come back in time, and they'll repay you eventually. It's just like any entrepreneur that is now a self-made millionaire, billionaire. The amount of hours they worked on their own to become that and didn't get paid for it, right? I've read a ton of stories and seen a ton of videos of poor entrepreneurs that had an idea and basically eating ramen noodles, sleeping in a mattress in a roach infested apartment until they could monetize their idea, until they could build up something that is now paying them back tenfold, and they're driving around in nice cars and nice homes. But what did they do, and where did they come from to get to that point, and how much time did they invest back in themselves to get to that point? Mm-hmm. These are the stories that you need to listen to in order to understand that. So, anyway, guys, I don't want to keep you all day. This has been a nice chat. So going forward, Kenny, we'll start with you. I know you said you wanted to get to the supervisor level, but let me ask you this, as far as technology in the trade, as far as where you see the trade going with technology, because there's a bunch of things that are on the forefront, the present, that are going to keep moving into the future. And that is like things like smart probes instead of a manifold gauge, pressing refrigeration pipe rather than brazing it. What else is there? All the apps that we can use nowadays that will help you determine deep system issues, all these things. Is this something that you embrace, the technology, because you're a younger person and you kind of grew up with a cell phone and a tablet and all this kind of stuff?
There's part of it for sure. I think there's a very important step that people should take with analog stuff first. That's how I learned, was, you know, analog gauges with the dials and doing superheat in your head and writing things down and all that, because that's the way he did it. That's the way I did it. And as I got better at doing that, I'm like, well, let's do the fancy stuff now. And it takes a lot of that, you know, it takes a lot of the hard work out of it. But you have to take the fancy new stuff with a big grain of salt, because, you know, there's apps that they have that'll tell you this is wrong or that's wrong. And you know for a fact it's not if you're paying attention, because of, you know, whatever algorithms aren't always great or however it is. And you have to know the systems and how to do it the right way first before you can do this technology and kind of combine them together to make it your life easier at that point. Like I have the S-Man, the field piece S-Mans, and I use them about half the time because I still like my analog stuff, and the S-Mans just make it, you know, if I'm doing whatever easier, just, or maybe faster or easier, but I think you should still have that knowledge of how the things work. You shouldn't have to rely on equipment to tell you what's going on or how to do things.
Yeah. So I agree with you. Knowing how to do things manually first is going to be a big step in your knowledge and your education. I've done it old school. I've done everything old school. I've bent pipe old school. I've expanded pipe old school. I used to have my old swaging kit was like a flare block, and I had a hammer and a little die, and I'm pounding it. I've done everything manually. What I notice at this point in my career is when you get a chance to utilize technology, it makes you not a better technician from a knowledge standpoint, but it makes you a more efficient technician because some of the tools that are there allow you to connect to a system faster, troubleshoot faster, bend pipe faster,
right?
Connect pipe faster. There's all kinds of things that are intertwined that make you more efficient. Now, Ken, you're roughly probably in the same age bracket as I am, and you're not in the field as much as you used to be. But what is your take on the technology that we have nowadays that we can implement on our jobs? I mean, give me your honest input. It doesn't matter what you think. I just want your honest input.
Yeah. I mean, so I started using it, I would say the last couple of years. I had some digital gauges and, you know, the last couple of years before I got out of the field, where it was, you know, I was in the field every day. I think it allows the tech to be more efficient in some instances, faster. The only issue that I have, I mean, batteries dying, you know, and you got to sit back and then go charge the batteries, or you just say, for some of the digital gauges, I mean, I don't know what their cost now, but a couple of years ago, I mean, they were close to $700-$800. You do commercial.
The prices have significantly dropped over the first 5-6 years ago from the first set I got to now. Prices have started to reduce because there's more of a market where now there's competitors competing for that same space, mm-hmm. which has drove some of the pricing down, which is a good thing. I mean, healthy competition is good because it allows the competition to make a better product and bring the price down, and that benefits all us technicians. So, I mean, the prices have reduced. And here's the thing I say about the battery argument. I've had this debate with a lot of people. Well, my meter takes batteries. So does my impact gun. So does my manometer. So does my scale. All the batteries die and all of these things.
Yeah.
So now what I do is anytime I go to like Costco or whatever, I'll buy like a shit ton of batteries, like a big box of them, triple A's, double A's, 9 volts. And in my van, I've got more batteries than I can count. And that's just part and parcel of the technology. Yeah, you need batteries to run your tools. Mm-hmm. So I just make sure that I have a ton of backups.
Yeah, I think what you touched on with that, you know, it would have probably been more beneficial to myself if I was more organized as far as having batteries on hand, you know, because, you know, you forget to turn your gauges off. I know they do time out, but for the most part, drop them off a roof coming down with, you know, your bag. There's $700 down the drain. You know, which again, goes
now here's,
but they're very beneficial. I mean, 100%, I have no issues one way or the other. You know, I'm not pro old school, pro, you know, new technology. It's kind of like in the middle.
Yep.
Especially the Bluetooth gauges. Those are pretty sweet.
Yeah. Like the probes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is the industry is, this is my prediction that I made a few weeks back. The industry, because of the way it's moving and so quickly, and because of the way it's being taught now, my prediction is in 10 years, there's not going to be many people using a manifold gauge anymore, digital or analog, because of the of the many things a manifold can potentially heart. Like, I mean, you're carrying around potentially burnt refrigerant oil in those hoses. You can bring them over to another system, cross contaminate. Pulling a vacuum with a manifold gauge is not being taught a lot these days because you have a lot of leak points. You have restrictions. The industry is moving more towards probes. And this is my prediction, is that you're not going to see kids in 10 years from now that are 25 years old service techs. You're not really going to see them pulling out a manifold. It's going to be probes because they're just so quick to hook up. You can get everything on one screen. You're not going to cross-contaminate a system because you don't have a probe filled with burnt out compressor oil from another system that you were working on type thing. So this is just a prediction that I have moving forward. We'll see if it pans out or not.
Yeah. But
I've made lots of predictions that I get people yell at me for.
or die.
But
somebody's got, you know,
yeah.
You got to die. That's, you know, and I guess, yeah, that's a whole other topic. I mean, but just a little loss. Oh,
yeah. The whole additive topic is another rabbit hole that could take hours.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the low loss fittings, I mean, you put your probes on, you know, you're not pulling, you know, 6 ounces out of a system, you know, depending on, I mean, some of these techs at one point, I'm sure you've seen, I mean, 3-foot, 6-foot hoses that's, you know, 5-6 years ago that we're using, and you're on a critical system, makes a huge difference. And now you got,
oh, especially if
you're 5 guys, you know, that have put their gauges on in the last 6 months. I mean, you're a pound, 2 pounds shy on a system.
Yeah, it's some of the companies that come around and have done maintenance in my area. My neighbor used to have this. They paid for it through like their home warranty or something. And the guy would come every year and do a maintenance on their AC. And every year the guy would be standing there with his gauges and his 6-foot hoses connected to the system. Like every year for like 5 years. I'm like, dude, it's running fine. Like I wanted to go to him and say, dude, for the last you've probably taken out about just maybe a pound of refrigerant over the last 5 years, connecting your gauges up to this system. Right. So don't be surprised if they call you back in a couple years and it's short of gas and you can't find the leak. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, anyway.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.